Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody. My name is Neil White, and from Backpage, this is The Big Interview with Graham Hunter. We are off and running with another season. This is the first of our monthly Q&A shows. So in Barcelona, we have Graham Hunter, your host for The Big Interview, and we're joined by Pete Jensen. And let me tell you, if you think PSG are stockpiling talent this summer, you haven't been paying attention to La Liga TV. Pete is the returning ace over there, so the Mbappe to Gary Lineker's Messi. Graham, you can be Neymar. Seriously, just before we start, you two both do comms ads for your work for La Liga, so you must be a little bit buzzed about how they're ramping up this season.
Yeah, particularly. Listen, Pete's done some of it this season. I'm yet to debut. That'll be Sunday. I don't know when people are listening to this, but the ESPN talent roster is absolutely fantastic. I think to one of the things, it's not just the talent on it, it's got to be reach. ESPN is an indication that now La Liga can basically be taken in every home in North America, whereas before the BN signal didn't reach properly. So you had lots of people, and across the time we've been publishing books, Neil, or the films come out, there's always a question of how do I get hold of? How can I? I didn't think it was like that with television anymore, but it is, Pete, isn't it? And ESPN now give us a bigger reach in the States, which I think is just, it's not about our plans for global extension. It's about people who want to be able to see great football being able to see great football.
Yeah, it feels like we've been on AM for a long time and now we're on FM.
When you introduce him in the future, can we trademark? Can we just say the mighty Pete Jensen? Let's not mess around anymore. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm one down before the season's even started.
So never mind Mbappe and Neymar, you are now the smashy and nicey of La Liga TV. That's much more accurate.
Absolutely, mate. One of my all-time favourites.
The questions...
Absolutely great, mate. Absolutely great, mate.
The questions for these shows come from our socios, the listeners who support us at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. We have a new one that arrived in the last couple of days. So hello, Jamie Martin. You are our most recent socio. Welcome and thank you. And we have a whole bunch of first-time contributors to the Q&A show this month. So let's go. First up is Derek Elder. Derek says, hi, Graham. With Messi leaving, will this now allow other players more freedom to express themselves and their ability more? On the same subject, Michael English asked, with the adjustment of Messi having left and the chasm it may create, do you think they will remain competitive and be in a position to challenge? Does it give players like De Jong and Pedri a new lease of life and freedom to come to the fore? So we're going to start off by focusing in this first part of the Q&A on Messi and Barcelona. Graham, it's an interesting one because, you know, ever since Messi's been Messi, there's been some analysis that the Barcelona team revolved and kind of like more and more as the years went on revolved around him. How much does it change for the guys that were playing behind him and around him?
Well, I think a word that's missing in Derek's question is responsibility, because the absolute worst of sort of mental log jamming that occurred amongst players who couldn't click with Messi, that had largely diminished. There was certainly a case that Brathwaite was taking a lot of time to understand Messi. It was the case, well, let's go back to Zlatan and David Villa, and you know, there have been other footballers who have wanted to take protagonism, and Messi's like, you know, give me the ball now. There was a famous time when Messi turned to his left, I think, and and gave David Villa a massive row in the middle of the pitch, in the middle of a match. And yet, when Villa recently was asked for, you know, the greatest ever players he'd seen or worked with, he named Messi easily number one, not just to have worked with, but he thinks he's the number one player ever, full of admiration for him, despite having his head bitten off by Messi now and again for not doing what he was told. And this Martinet idea that everybody had to dance to Messi's tune off the pitch, I think wasn't quite as true as the malicious gossip mongers like to portray. Very firm views, could take offence if somebody wasn't doing what he wanted. Yeah, but that's standard for any dressing room. On the pitch, it was different. If somebody wasn't clicking with Messi, then it became a central problem, given how important he was. He was the central nervous system. The name that steps forward for Derek's question probably is Griezmann, because at first Griezmann and Messi, Griezmann wanted to be the puppy dog chasing the tennis ball, wanted to be everywhere, whereas what Messi wanted was a system via which, again, I'd use the point, he was the centre of command, and if the ball didn't go off him, it was like it was him saying, I want to start the move, be where you should be, systematic, whereas Griezmann was like, I've invented this idea, this runs what I used to do, or I'm going to drop back and press. And so, but halfway through last season, particularly in games against Athletic, Griezmann and Messi had figured out what to do, how to service the great man. Another great example was at Villarreal, when there was a little back heel from Messi and a chip from Griezmann. They did work it out. So in terms of taking Messi out of the equation and then saying life's easier for everybody, I don't think it's going to be like that. And the responsibility factor is that there's an awful lot of goals. We won't see the same style of play because nobody else is Messi. But, in terms of goals scored and assists given, yeah, the tasks now need to be handed out, Derek.
Yeah, if you want to be really optimistic about it, I suppose you can go back to when Declan Ronaldinho left and the way that Xavi and Iniesta just exploded after that, kind of stepped into the vacuum. But I'm not sure. Well, there is no Xavi and there is no Iniesta this time. So, it's going to be more difficult. Sure, Jordi Alba won't now be passing to Messi every time he gets the ball. But does that make things better? Depends who he passes to. Instead, sure, other people can take free kicks, but they're not going to score them the way Messi did. I think I'm on the side of the argument that Barcelona are going to miss Messi even more than people think. The gains are going to be so small compared to the losses. But Griezmann is an interesting one. The criticism of him has been unfair, because if you look at the stats and if you look at the way he's applied himself in the last 2 years, to me, he's beyond criticism. And the criticism that's made of him is that, yeah, but we paid over 100 million for him, and for that you have to be the match winner and you have to lead the team. How could he possibly lead the team and be the match winner? Well, Messi was there. He knew that Messi had to take that role and he had to fit in around it. Now there's no Messi, so let's see if he steps up in the way that and grows in the way that Xavi and Iniesta did when Declan Ronaldinho left.
On Griezmann, because that's the player that you two have both focused on, I mean, is there any question that he will last the window as a Barcelona player?
Short and simple answer. He told them that the only club he would possibly go to was Atleti. Other than that, he wasn't very interested. There was a little bit of a tickle from Manchester United. But of course, the Jadon Sancho deal tripped that up, and my guess would be, yeah, he's a Barca player for at least the remainder of the season, at least.
And he was prepared to. Sorry, Neil, he was prepared to go to Atleti. I mean, he's been adamant since he joined. All the stories that have circulated about him leaving, he's been adamant that he didn't want to leave and he wanted to stay. And for the first time, he'd accepted that, yeah, okay, you want me to go to Atleti, I'll go to Atleti. And as Graham says, it's the one club I will go to. And Saul wanted to come to Barca. So I think that deal, we can't underestimate how close that deal was to being made. And, you know, the last minute, the fact that Barcelona didn't want to take any hit on the on Griezmann's wages, and the fact that Atleti thought Barca were so desperate that we can push them on this, and then it falls apart.
Second question from Socio Jake Garlick, who's going to take us back to the issue that was dominating every football conversation last week. Jake says, putting my tinfoil hat on, If Barcelona really wanted Messi to stay, why did they let his contract expire? Surely they knew. Pete, I think you should take this one first.
Well, I would flip Jake's question on its head and say if Messi really wanted to stay, rather than if Barca really wanted him to stay. I think we know why Messi didn't sign when Bartomeu was the president. And we know why Barcelona weren't able to make him stay. Then Laporta comes in. So yeah, there could have been a contract renewal and not a situation where his contract had run out and he had to be a new signing. I think a part of Leo Messi wanted to go. And people will say, so why is he in floods of tears then on the Sunday? Well, he's in floods of tears on the Sunday because it's 20 years of his life. And he's closing the door on 20 years of his life. He's got a room full of people that he's not going to see on a regular basis anymore that for the last two decades he's seen every day. Of course he's in bits. But that doesn't mean that, above all else, Leo Messi is a competitor. And he knows that three Champions Leagues, because he doesn't really count the one in Paris when he didn't even play, and no World Cups, is a poor return for the greatest player that's ever played the game. And he could see at Barcelona that even if they managed to scrape enough money out from the back of the sofa to pay for him, they weren't going to have a team capable of winning the Champions League. So, and I was at the goodbye press conference, and you know, you see him come out and he, in the floods of tears, and he looked very much like he did when he first joined the club, kind of head bowed and, you know, timid and a little bit awkward. But the remarkable change during the however long the press conference lasted, as the question started to turn towards the future, and at one point he said, yeah, I'm going to be sad when I leave here, but as soon as I get back to playing football, which is what I love to do more than anything, then that sadness will disappear. And you saw how he was at the PSG presentation. You saw how willing he was to poke his head out of every single window, be it at the airport, the hospital, the hotel, to wave to the fans. A little bit reminiscent of when Raul, after two decades at Real Madrid, went to Schalke and how much he loved it. This is going to be that times 100 because he's going to win things. I think they went into that. And let's not forget, with the 50% thing, everyone talking about this big sacrifice that Messi was going to make in terms of salary. The 50% cut. But they were asking for 2 years' money across 5 years. So he was going to get the full amount of money. He didn't sit down with Barcelona and say, listen, just give me a two-year deal or even just give me a one-year deal. I'm not saying he should have, by the way. He's given fantastic service to Barcelona and he's got every right to say, listen, after two decades, lads, you're in a bit of a state. You've screwed it up badly. You've not made the best of things with the best player in the world. And you know what? I've got a couple of years left playing in Europe. And I'm going to go with my pal and have some fun in Paris, and it's been good.
Neil, it's a brilliant answer from Pete, and I haven't heard you on this subject at all, Pete, before, and it you know, knocks you back in your heels to hear fresh ideas differently expressed, because the tone of what Pete said there and the content is really rather different to what's been going on in Spain, where people have been kind of lost in the hurly-burly of finger-pointing and accusations and sadness and conspiracy theories. Analytically, I think that's as good as you're going to get. Jake's question leaves a bit of room. I don't think necessarily this is the way Jake was asking it about, because Jake, you know, it wasn't in Barcelona's power to renew his contract. It was down to Messi. And Messi and his people are obviously keeping as strong a hand as they possibly could in normal circumstances by saying, you know, we want to take a look at what else is going around. If you've got to compete with other offers, clearly the other offers came in. But the interesting thing to me, one of the interesting things was that it wasn't exactly cap in hand, but Messi, having turned Paris Saint-Germain down, had to go back to them, or his dad did at least, and say, you know, see that no that we gave you a few weeks ago? Well, it's now probably a yes because, you know, we've been betrayed. And Jake, your question leaves room for... You finish it with saying surely they knew, and if they really wanted to keep him. I think there is a very serious accusation of double dealing to Joan Laporta, the president, who sat down for weeks and weeks and negotiated with Messi, perhaps in the belief that he could get rid of enough salary that they could actually fulfil this deal that they were offering to Leo Messi and register him with La Liga. Whereas now when you look at the figures, when we're granted access to the figures, it seemed absolutely impossible. And we're still, from a not a conspiracy theorist point of view, but, you know, Joan Laporta had Jorge Messi and Leo Messi believing that they were coming that Thursday to sign a new deal. And, you know, treating them that way is pretty reprehensible in my view. I'm actually, the more that I think about it, including listening to Pete, I'm really enthused by watching Leo Messi at that club in that company. Financial fair play and state-owned clubs aside, the ultimate product is what we watch on the pitch and how they compete. And I hope it's not a Harlem Globetrotters side, but if you look at the strength of the first 15, 16, 17 players, it's absolutely extraordinary. Setting aside for later months the questions about, you know, the financial health of European football and whether the PSG should be allowed to do that, the fact is we're going to be watching it, and it'll be interesting to watch Messi on different pitches in a different climate, having to operate in a daily, not the training ground, but having to operate daily around a different language, in a different culture. That will interest me enormously. I suspect if it clicks, they're treble winners this season, having never won the Champions League before. But Laporta remains the figure who, Jake, hasn't been telling the truth to everybody all the time, that's for sure. And where he's lied most knowingly will judge how guilty he is of a big sin against the history of Barcelona and towards Leo Messi. And I suspect that the Barca fans are going to look more and more at whether Florentino Perez clicked his fingers and said, see this deal you're doing with La Liga to keep Leo Messi and allow yourself to register him. That's making them more powerful. It's stopping our Super League fight. We'll come to that in a minute, but I think it's going to emerge that Joan Laporta danced to Florentino Perez's tune over Leo Messi. And if Pete or I had tried to sell you that story 18 months or 4 years ago, there will be a Barcelona president who, when the Real Madrid president clicks his finger, lets Leo Messi go. You know, there have been, you know, villagers and pitchforks and torches outside our houses trying to, you know, take our heads and put us in the stocks.
We'll get back to that stuff shortly, but our next question comes from our sponsors at Bet365, who sort of pitch forward to life after Leo and ask, will Barcelona finish outside of the Champions League places over the next 3 seasons? So if we take that kind of non-specifically to refer to sort of a medium-term decline on the pitch post-Leo Messi and presumably with the effects of Laporta's kind of shocking account of the accounts, taken into consideration, can we expect a medium-term decline from Barcelona in the coming seasons, guys?
I think it's possible this season. I've just had to do my predicted league table, and I've put them fourth. But it's not inconceivable that Sevilla, Villarreal, Atleti, and Real Madrid finish above Barcelona this season. A lot will depend on the atmosphere. What Graham says about how the fans now perceive Laporta as being a bit of a puppet for Florentino. He doesn't seem to be in control, even at his own club. It seems that Fran Reverti is calling the shots and is maybe the one who came in on that Thursday when everything changed and said, you know what, this CVC deal, there's no way you can accept it. So if the supporters, and of course they're back in the stadiums now, there's going to be 30,000 there on Sunday against Real Sociedad, and the capacities are going to rise through the season, so the Camp Nou hopefully will be full, you know, sort of middle of the season time. And how the supporters react to the president, how they react to the players as well. Some of the players were whistled, booed at the start of the Gampa, the last friendly before the season starts, because they're blamed for either not leaving or for taking long new contracts, as if the players will turn those down. Obviously, the blame lies with the people who gave them those contracts. But the atmosphere in general could be a little bit poisonous, and that's really going to take its toll in this particular season. I think Ansu Fati is massive in terms of how the season goes. If Ansu Fati comes back pretty soon, playing the way he was before he got injured, then that will cheer everybody up. In harness with Pedri, we'll all be talking about, you know, the future and the new Barca. But that's a lot of responsibility on his shoulders after a whole season out injured. And if you don't get that kind of boost of youth, and it is a little bit doom and gloom, and the atmosphere turns a little bit poisonous, I think especially in this season, with other teams as strong as they are, there's a real fight on their hands to stay in the top four.
The Bet365 questions are a tough one, Neil, because they ask, Will Barca finish out the Champions League in, what is it, the next three seasons?
Next three seasons.
You know, every week's an odyssey, is a universe, here, never mind the next two seasons. If you wanted a wild punt on it, then the idea that things might get worse before they get better, and they might finish outside the Champions League positions, as they did the last time that Laporta was taking over, and they ended up being knocked out of the UEFA Cup by Celtic with those remarkable couple of games, Alan Thompson scoring at Parkhead, and then the 0-0 at Camp Nou, which to this day I haven't seen many more 5-0 0-0 masquerading as a 5-0 game. It was an extraordinary one, and they were knocked out of the UEFA Cup. So feasible idea this season. I think that if they register their players, they win the title. The players we're talking about registering, to have mentioned them so far, some people will know that they've signed Eric Garcia on a free. They've recouped their shared investment on Emerson at Betis and said, okay, just like they did once with Di Stefano, who was shared with Real Madrid, but they gave up on that. Well, with Emerson, they bought half shares with Betis and the Brazilian right back. I like the look of, he's still raw, but he's better than Dest right now. If he comes in, Eric Garcia at right centre-back. Depay, clearly at the moment, is in good nick and motivated. Strange player, strange man, but talented and very, very much Koeman's pupil. The guy around whom Koeman based his 3-5-2 when he was the Netherlands coach. Somebody who absolutely understands the coach's will. And therefore, Ansu is Pete's answer to Ansu, and it's to me, it's just exciting to see him back, because there's been so many operations on what should have been a routine piece of foliage clipping that you began to worry for his future a little bit. So let's wait and see how well he looks when he's back, how soon he gets back. But we'll talk about other clubs in a moment. My idea is that there is such character, such talent in that Barcelona squad, and the time between January and April last season showed them to be extremely strong again, erratic, and then Koeman screwed up and didn't have the wherewithal to understand what was needed of him as teams worked out his system. But once you introduce, let's say, Emerson, Ansu, Eric Garcia, Depay to this squad, I think they were, unless Mbappe comes to Real Madrid, I think Barcelona win the title.
We're going to take a quick break now. We'll be right back with more of your questions.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. Okay, we have a two for now. Two socios asking linked questions. Let's start with Luis Berga, who asks, Graham, can you explain the latest twists and turns with the CVC La Liga deal? If I understand correctly, says Luis, they just did the same proposed deal, except they cut out Real Madrid and Barcelona. If that's true, then that seems like a very good thing for the league as a whole. But it begs the question, is the hesitancy by Madrid and Barca Super League related, or do they simply think of themselves as too valuable to use the same terms as everybody else? And Ian Boddy asks, four clubs voted against the La Liga CVC deal, including Barca and Madrid. Will they stick with this position and miss out on the funds or not? Difficult for Laporta, who said Messi had to go to avoid mortgaging the club's future, because if he changes position on CVC now, then Messi must have had to go for another reason. What's your view? Graham, would you like to jump in first on that one?
Well, Luis and Ian, I don't think we've answered a more difficult question or a more complicated question on this socio Q&A. And I want to lean heavily on Pete to guide me back onto the straight and narrow when I disappear off into the darkness. I really liked Athletic Club's point of view, who said, well, you've just thrown this at us. This is extraordinarily big in terms of the potential good but also the potential debilitating clauses. You're throwing money at clubs in a way that can distort the transfer market right at the last day. Okay, there's 3 weeks left, 2.5 weeks left. We haven't got the time to study it. You're asking us to rush this through. And it was the most grown-up answer I've heard about this during the whole summer. Luis talked about if they go ahead with the same sort of deal but without the big two, and at the moment with Athletic, isn't that a good deal for Spanish football? The fact is, I don't know, and I'm really sad to say this because Javier Tebas, the president of La Liga, is somebody with whom I don't share a lot, particularly politics. But I unequivocally think that the majority of what he's done since he came in has been really, really important for not just La Liga as an entity, and by which I mean the member clubs and the structure, not the company. But I think that he's modernising. I think the salt he's rubbing on wounds is salt that needs to cauterise wounds that have held Spanish football back for many, many years. And we're used to in this country, although neither Peter or I are lobby journalists who need the favour of a particular president, it's impossible not to fall into the mode of reporting whereby knowing a president or knowing a spokesman or knowing a vice president or being tipped from within a club helps guide you about what's going to happen, because normally the club's ruled, particularly the big 2-3. At the moment, my position, as far as Luis and Ian need to understand, is a little bit like Athletics, because certainly the reporting in Spain following the meeting of the clubs yesterday is that, well, this will just go ahead without the two cherries on the icing. Well, CVC haven't spoken about this, and I haven't seen we haven't really seen CVC, a private equity investment fund, speaking at great length about it, particularly if they're being asked to give the same deal without Real Madrid and Barcelona, and just in grown-up terms, if I adopt the Athletic Club position, if they're going to offer the same money for a deal without Real Madrid and Barcelona, then your ears need to prick up and think, well, what's in it for them? It seems utterly impossible that should go ahead, utterly impossible. And if they do go ahead on the same terms, then exactly what kind of riches are waiting for CVC over the remaining 40 years of the deal, where they'll be clawing back their investment and making hundreds of millions of profit? And if the clubs have taken time to go and speak to people in F1 about being involved with CVC as the coach driver of your sport, they won't get good reports. So, you know, it presses at the most, not debilitated, debilitated part of your response system to say, the loose equation is, Spanish football is in grave debt. We're going to speak about transfers in a little bit. In our working lifetimes, Pete and I, there's never been less investment in new players during a transfer window. The clubs are in genuinely perilous positions, and they're being offered pretty immediate sums of large cash. And your instinct is not just to say take it at any cost, but your instinct is to say, well, we need that so much now, then, you know, the devil and coachman that ride through your club for the next 40 years, well, be damned, just take it. And I hate being aligned with this current version of Florentino Perez, who I'm pretty sure that Luis asked is the Super League behind this, and it is. One of the, apart from looking at the terms and conditions in the CVC offer, there is no doubt in my mind that Florentino Perez has said, this strengthens Javier Tebas, who's one of our top two opponents for the Super League. This strengthens the resolve of any other clubs in Spain not to support us in any way for the Super League. This makes La Liga stronger if this money comes in. We're just not taking it point full stop. So I hate to be aligned with this version of Florentino Perez, because, you know, he's an ass for his greedy, self-serving Superliga plans. It's just completely wrong, and I'll oppose him until my last breath. But unfortunately, on CVC, I have grave, grave reservations, Ian, Luis, about whether it's the right deal. And now Pete will put the finer points on my broadsword slashing left and right.
Well, The deal was 2.7 billion to be shared between the top two, the clubs in the top two divisions. Having said no, the four clubs obviously won't, as it stands now, they won't get any money. And so it becomes 2.1 billion and it's shared between, instead of all the clubs in the top two divisions, all the clubs bar Atletico, Barcelona, Real Madrid and Oviedo. And Oviedo's reasoning behind rejecting it was quite interesting as well, because they said, you know, we're in good shape. We actually don't need this money. We don't need to take this gamble. And in one way, it's a little bit contradictory. Tevez has done so well to, as they say, sanar las cuentas the Spanish football and sort out the finances of Spanish football. And the clubs don't owe the Spanish taxman the obscene amounts of money that they once did. And the clubs are in better shape. Now, obviously, they've been shaken up massively by the pandemic, and no more so than the bigger clubs who rely on match day money coming in. But they're in pretty good shape, all things considered. So to then have to take this, what has to be considered a gamble, because you're talking about the next 50 years giving up 10% of your TV money, it's a little bit contradictory. But all the clubs, bar the four that we've mentioned, have said yes. Madrid are going to take this to court. Now, the fact that the La Liga say, OK, well, now the money won't go to Madrid and Barcelona or Athletic and Oviedo, therefore it becomes less money. That may weaken any legal challenge because, you know, Madrid aren't part of the deal anymore. They're not going to get the money. They don't have to give up their 10%. But doesn't it send Madrid and Barcelona down a separate avenue where they can end up negotiating their own TV deals? We don't want that. That's going back to the bad old days of, you know, a decade or so ago when that was very much what they wanted to do. So you can understand Athletic saying, we're not really sure about this. It's been hoisted on us. And you can understand Oviedo saying, listen, in many ways, thanks to the measures that La Liga have taken, we're not in that bad a shape, all things considered. So do we need to be doing this now? There was private investment. There was an investment fund behind the Superliga idea as well, remember? And that was one of the things I didn't like about it, one of the many things I didn't like about it. And it's the thing I don't like about this either. The one good thing is that clubs are not going to be able to spend all the money in the transfer market. I mean, it's very clear that I think Barca, had they said yes, would have got 280 million and only 40 million of that would have been able to spend on players. A large chunk of it has to go on infrastructure and another chunk on restructuring debt. So, you know, Tevez is still trying to make sure that the money that comes in is spent on growing the league in a sustainable way. So that's admirable. I completely understand the reservations, and I second that emotion, Graham, what you just said.
Our final question for this first part of the monthly Q&A comes from Socio Adam Brocklehurst, who says, I think many see Messi and Ronaldo leaving for pastures new just being the tip of the iceberg, with even those that have stayed, such as Kroos, Modric, Benzema, Oblak, Griezmann and Bale, having started to either play into or past their absolute peak or have played themselves out of form. As a result, is La Liga diminishing in quality, and how does its overall quality compare to Europe's other top leagues as we stand here today? So I guess you two are very much part of the way La Liga is exported to the rest of the world. How do you think post-Messi, post-Ronaldo, obviously in a bigger picture, and with those stars that Adam's just named approaching the twilight of their careers, Graham, how do you think La Liga compares right now with the other shows in town?
Well, I'm going to take the Smokey Robinson position on this one, and I'm going to work out where Adam got his notion, which was the same notion as people have been peddling to us, Pete, for the last, I don't know, 7-8 years. Now, maybe, remember my uncle, Sander, saying to me, like, which is more accurate, a watch that's 5 minutes late or a watch that's stopped? And it's like, well, the watch that's stopped will be right twice a day. And sooner or later, Adam's question will hit a target. But one, we've been hearing this put on us, not by people like Adam, who, if he's a socio here, is a wide-thinking, smart, cosmopolitan, visionary socio. Hello, Adam. But the idea that La Liga's in decline has been pumped at us through various channels for, I would say, 7-8 years. I was in Belfast recently for the Super Cup final. And I must admit, looking at Villarreal's problems where Coquelin and Parejo were out, several of the players that started hadn't had much or any pre-season football. They'd been struck by COVID. They'd cancelled their pre-season tour. I think it was meant to be in Austria. Voith had been sort of carried off the training pitch on the Monday. And they went out against the Chelsea side, who, never mind being European champions, and never mind Emery and his players consistently referring to them as the best team in the world. I watched Chelsea training on the Tuesday night. And the fantastic thing, Adam, was that you get access to a full training session. So you watch them, and Chelsea's training was blisteringly good. I was so entranced by watching the different methods, ways in which they've taken certain drills and renewed them. And if you got Adam Pep Guardiola on this social Q&A and you asked him about what happened, one of the things that happened during the Champions League final, Guardiola would tell you that he's enamoured with the way that not just the things are developing, the Chelsea press, and when they win the ball, which they're very, very good at, became particularly good at under Tuchel. What Guardiola is entranced with is the decision-making once they've got the ball back for you on a press, and how rarely they then lose it again. So many teams, if they press and win it, will be peremptory and chicken without a head about, like, nah, charge, we go forward, and then they lose the ball again. And Guardiola's version is that Tuchel has got it drilled into his team really, really well, what the system is, not just about how to press and win the ball, but whether then to punch or whether then to build your guard up and build the play again, which is it's a fantastic thing to be focusing on when we're watching Chelsea over the next few months. And in training the other day, it just stood out that Chelsea should dismantle Villarreal. Now, if anybody watched the game, I was lucky enough to be there. If anybody watched the game, for 20, 25 minutes, it looked like a 4-5-0. And in the end, 120 minutes, certainly Chelsea's scoring chances were there. But it was Villarreal who got the equaliser and hit the woodwork twice. And therefore, by your normal measures, could have won, might have won on penalties, didn't. And that was a side that, considerably finished outside the Champions League slots in Spain and really quite capably held and should have beaten the European champions. Now, it's a one-off match. It's early in the season. It is not the litmus test for the whole of the season or for the changing levels of quality. But something's happening in the Premier League, and I don't know where Adam lives, but if he lives in England, then it's right this time to be saying, boy, look at the Premier League, because it's been years of foreign coaching, foreign physios, continental ideas being infused into what's brilliant about the Anglo-Saxon model of football that made it dominant for so many years around the world. And that mix, that cocktail, is very, very high octane indeed. The academies are doing good work. They're churning out players who have been brought up in the UK and therefore understand UK football, what the UK fans want, how teams, what their identity are. And yet they play with brains and technique that you used to see more often in the continent than in England. Things are changing. So the Premier League, apart from its investment and its talent plucking, is an extremely interesting league right now. Yet, technique somehow seems to be able to cope with it when technique is fit enough and not exhausted. And therefore, when I was looking at the last, I don't know how many, 15, 16 Super Cups, I think Spanish teams had competed 97% of them, meaning that over at least the last decade and a half, Spanish clubs have either won the Europa League or the Champions League or both. And I use that to answer your question, Adam, because things are changing in La Liga. There has been, sequentially, it's probably most notable at Barcelona to a degree at Real Madrid, but, sequentially year on year, Barcelona have literally season on season, summer on summer lost Puyol and then Xavi and then Iniesta and then on it goes through, I don't know, Suarez and Neymar and Messi it's been a real drain, and they epitomise what you're talking about. And Real Madrid haven't spent money because they're saving their pocket money up in a little piggy bank for Haaland or Mbappe. things are changing. But I believe, strongly believe, there are only two ways to look at your question properly. One, will there be any kind of financial fair play? Seferin is to propose a new system altogether that balances out the privations that clubs have in facing up to, particularly Manchester City, Chelsea and Paris Saint-Germain, who have limitless funds. If there's no way of properly and responsibly harnessing that, then this brain drain may continue. The other way to look at it is that if people give a little bit of patience to the young talents coming through right across Spanish football, and there's a plethora of them, then Spanish football will be just fine, and the difference will be that you'll see them less often buying superstar footballers because they can't quite compete against Paris Saint-Germain, Chelsea and Manchester City. But Adam, this season again, I have to say, if we haven't got the time to list every quality player that will make you turn on La Liga television this season, but no, I reject your motion.
Yeah, Tevez got asked this a couple of times during the summer. He did a couple of video conferences, and his answer was always the same, that the Premier League has been the best league in the world for years, and how many Ballons d'Or they had. So in other words, having the best players does not equate to having the best league. Are we now saying that because Messi plays in France, the French league is better than the Spanish league? Absolutely, 100% it isn't. They've got a ridiculous situation there where they've got far and away the most expensive side that's ever been assembled, and it's in what is France, the fifth league in Europe. It may well be that they have the league won by, you know, January. Spain were brilliant at the Euros, the best team to watch, silver medalists at the Olympics. We saw what Villarreal did, as Graham's just talked about, against Chelsea and at the end of last season against Manchester United. What makes a good league if it isn't having the best players? Well, the fact that it's a competition, and the fact that the competition goes to wire. There was no more exciting league than the Spanish league last season. European places, relegation, who won the title. It's going to be exactly the same this season. I genuinely think that there are five candidates, albeit that Villarreal and Sevilla will be outsiders, but five candidates for the title. And the young players that are coming through as well, and we saw that in the Euros with Spain. So I'm going to have fun watching Messi, and PSG is going to be fascinating. But 99% of the time, I'm going to prefer to watch the Spanish League and the Premier League, because that's where the competition is. And the competition is the key word. They don't have that in Ligue 1, and they do have it in Spain, and they have it in the Premier League as well.
Okay, that's all we have for you today. We're back tomorrow with the rest of the questions from our socios, looking at the other contenders for La Liga this season. Graham Hunter, Pete Jensen, you were sensational. Thank you for listening, everyone. Enjoy your football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.